Our passion didn't start with a mouth. It started with people, with the well-being of the profession. And if you're like me, maybe a little bit of your nerdiness in all things tech too. We all want to love what we do, but the truth is burnout, people problems, and glass ceilings can keep us from doing what we set out to do. So let's get back to the heart of connection. Welcome to the Dental Handoff. This show is about passing you the knowledge, the habits, the systems, and the strategies to lead your teams, lean on your tech, and listen to your gut while you take care of people and truly the overall health of our communities. Let's stop using the wrong end of the toothbrush, y'all. My name is Dr. Kelly Tanner. Oh, and uniquely, I'm a dental hygienist too. You can consider me a guru in the dental and leadership industry. With over 3 decades of experience, my goal is to take you to the next level by empowering growth, perspective, and confidence. By identifying the gaps, recognizing the plaque, and extracting the truth with the other experts in the field. I'll share their stories, empower you to own yours, and elevate your passion in the process. So have a seat in the chair, put on your bib, and let's get to work. Welcome to the Dental Handoff. I'm Dr. Kelly Tanner. I am at the Chicago Midwinter Dental Meeting, one of the best meetings of the year. And today I have the true honor of having the David Hornbrook with me. I always tell a story about how I know folks. And I want to tell you guys that this guy right here was the first person I ever saw speak on stage when I was a baby hygienist. My doctor invested in the team and he took, and actually she, it was Dr. Carol Morgan, took us to La Jolla, California. Mm-hmm. And it was you. It was it Tony Robbins?
Tony Robbins.
And who else was it? Do you remember?
Oh, I didn't remember who else spoke. I don't know.
Yeah, I have the workbook.
Tony and I were on the same date. I know that. It was kind of it was kind of challenging for me to accept the fact that I was the opening man for Tony Robbins, right? But I had a really good time, and I got to spend some time with him. And he's a very interesting person for those that have followed Anthony Robbins. And I got to speak with him again in D.C. for a similar event. So it's so awesome that you remember that and that time it happened. That would have been 1999.
Yes, 1999.
Yep.
He was telling a story about his injury and about how he had to reinvent himself, overcome what his experience was. And that was a moving and powerful for your audience. I know it was for you at the time because
right.
It was fresh.
Right. I had just come. So for those who don't know, I lost my thumb in 1999 in a wakeboarding accident. And I had literally just had it removed and still bandages when I got the opportunity to speak with Tony. It was called the Giants in Dentistry. And it was a big crowd because of Tony, not me. They showed up for me just like you go to the Stones and it's like some funky, you know, high school band that opening and they get 30,000 people, right? So we had like, there must have been 3,000 people there.
It was
a great event.
Amazing.
But my presentation that day was called Ruby Red Slippers. And if you go back to your workbook, you would say, I still have a VHS tape of it. Not that I can play it anywhere, but it sits there on my shelf, right? And it was really about having the opportunity to make decisions in your life that you're passionate about. You know, I was given a letter by my surgeon that said I get full disability, I can't practice anymore. I'm right-handed, I'm looking at my thumb thinking, maybe he's right, right? Maybe I can't practice anymore. And so it's emotional for me. So I made a decision that day. It's like, this isn't going to keep me from being a dentist. In fact, it made me a much better dentist because I thought people would say, oh, David, you know, David lost his thumb. Is he still going to be able to do cosmetic dentistry? Is he still going to be doing better dentistry? And so I had to reinvent how I held things for a long time. Like, this was interesting because I had a video done about 2 months after it happened. And it was by a guy that videos, I was seating veneers in a live patient video. And the guy who, the videographer, was someone who had videoed a lot of dentists in the past, right? And so because my thumb was so sore, when I was putting on bonding agent, I put the little bender brush between my long finger and my middle finger. That's how I brush it. And afterwards, he says, I've never seen that before. And I've videoed a lot of people throughout my career.
Right.
And it's like, dude, I don't have a thumb. I couldn't do this, right? So I reinvented myself of what I wanted to be. And I will tell you that I became a much better dentist because I realized I thought I needed to because of a disability.
But the cases that you show, people even talk about you. As I was sitting out there with the dinks,
you know, harassing the dinks, the dentists in the know out there. We're talking about David Helmberg and the legacy that you have left and still leave to this day, that there are people in this hall who would only see you if they only see you if they had the opportunity to have any type of interior restoration because of who you are and what you've done in the industry.
Thanks. Just, I'm honored and I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. But yeah. Listen, this guy right here, I thought when I saw him on stage, I was like, I want to do that one day. And I actually get to do this now. So you inspired me on so many levels to,
I appreciate you saying that.
Truly, to say, I can see myself in you and this is my heart and what I want to do one day when I grow up.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know it's kind of.
I'm still looking for what I want to do when I grow up, too.
Same.
Maybe I want to be you. I want to do this. You're having fun.
Yeah. Let's push roll. I'm going to go to his house in Mexico. I was like, what are you doing these days? He's like, practicing, going to Mexico.
Yeah, I still practice dentistry. Like I was telling you earlier, I have a really good life work balance, right? Really good. I work really hard when I work, and I work 2 to 3 days a week besides my lectures because I'm still traveling and still teaching live patient courses. And then I play really, really hard. So usually I'm down in Mexico 4 to 5 days a week.
Heck yeah.
Because I'd be there right now instead of Chicago, you know, weather would be better. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's interesting what you said about that. And you know, I have the humility to realize that the speaker is only as good as the audience, right? If people didn't show up and want to see me, I'm a terrible speaker and it's not a successful program. So, you know, I'm always humbled and honored when people show up to see me. Right. Because it's saying, you know what, maybe I can share some of my passion because that's it right. Is passion.
Yes.
You know, we have a handpiece and we have a burr and we have assistant, we have suction and we have materials and we have labs and everyone has access to the same things, but not everyone is doing the same thing.
That's correct.
And not everyone's doing the same thing for as many years or working as hard as maybe they could have. I've been in practice, let me do the math, 37 years, long time. So if you would have told me 37 years ago that I would still love what I do and I'm still passionate about what I do 37 years from that date, I'd say, I don't think so. I mean, I'll be in Mexico full time surfing and relaxing, but I can't imagine not working. And it's because I have the passion for it. You know, I think it's hard. I think dentistry is really hard work, but I have the passion not to only do it for the benefit of my patients, but also to develop the skills and the knowledge that I can transfer some of those things to others. So maybe it'll change their life.
So why did you choose dentistry? Why did it choose you?
Well,
do you think?
It's really, you're probably one of the few people who haven't heard this story. And it's very ironic. So my dad was an OBGYN.
Okay.
In the day that they made house calls, there was no such thing as false labor. he was a workaholic. And we, you know, we grew up in a nice neighborhood, a nice house. But he was never at any of my sporting events, never came to my plays. He wasn't part of my life. He was my father, not my dad. Because he was always working. Always working. So I thought, even at an early age, I thought, you know, I kind of want to be a doctor too. I want to help people. But I don't want to be an OBGYN because he's never around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there was a dentist, a kid that my age, and his dad was a dentist. They lived in the same neighborhood, kind of had the same lifestyle. But his dad was always at the swim meets and the baseball games. And I thought, I want to be a dentist. You know, this is cool. I can still help people. I can still be a doctor and I can still be a dad. The ironic portion of all of this is I graduated in 1986. In 1989, I started lecturing a lot. And then I founded LVI and then PAC Live and the Hornberg Group, Clinical Mastery. That I was gone more away from my kids. I have two boys than my dad ever was. Ever. Because I was out traveling, lecturing, do what I like to do. So it's ironic, but this has been a really good profession. Absolutely love what I do.
When did it click for you that you, well, I know there's always the initial thing that attracts us, right? And then when you're in it, did you have an aha moment? It's like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing this. Did you have that moment while you're in school?
Well, I had the moment of, I couldn't just be a general quote unquote dentist. Because I thought it was boring. I chose dentistry like a lot of people chose dentistry. I want to help people. I want to make a good living. And I am very artistic and creative. I mean, that's my whole mindset works that way. And I thought, and I get to be artistic and creative working in dentistry.
Right.
In dental school, I realized there was nothing creative and artistic about dentistry at all. You were a technician. They put a tooth in the middle of the room and the dentist listening will totally relate. And they said, match it. You know, and whether it's clay or wax or whatever medium you're working with, You had to match that. If you wanted to be creative or artistic, you failed. You know, if I looked at that tooth and it was a maxillary first molar, and I thought, that cusp of Carabelli is really cool, I'm going to put three of them on mine, I failed.
Right.
So I thought, I'm in totally in the wrong profession. I don't want to be a technician, right? So in the mid 80s, 85, 86 is when some of the early resin materials came out. I had a really fortunate opportunity to actually be a Colzer rep during the summer.
Oh, wow.
Their philosophy was, you know, let's get these dental students, because they couldn't get their reps in the door of the dental office, right? But if it's a dental student and it worked, I would go in and say, you know, I'm from Colzer. And they would say, oh, he's busy. I'd say, well, I don't really want to sell him anything, but I'm in dental school. I want to watch him do some dentistry. I'm excited about that. And then the doctor would come out and say, well, come back. And then at the end of our little visit, they'd say, let me buy something from you, right? And so it worked. Wow. But, you know, at the time, Durafil was the first microfill that was really the beginning of the cosmetic stuff. This is before people were doing really veneer, porcelain veneers. And at the end of that summer, I kept my grip stock, all my stock from being a salesman. So I came back, and then some dental school instructor that probably had never done resin on a patient saw what I had, right? And they had never seen that. They said, do you want to teach this? And I said, yeah, I want to teach this. So I ended up teaching direct resin using all these cool modifiers, all these cool things people had during my senior year of dental school. And that's when I realized that aesthetic dentistry, right, wump-based dentistry, allows you to be creative. So I thought, now I'm helping people. I'm going to make a good living. I'm a doctor, and I get to be artistic. And so when I got out, it became fun for me. You know, whether it be a direct composite that I got to carve in Cool Anatomy, whether it be even my preparations within directs, it gave me the opportunity to be creative with my preps. It didn't look like the preps that I learned in dental school.
And the materials that have come out, you get to coalesce those and say, I like this better than that.
And then a relationship with your ceramist, again, a fellow artisan. And then the ability to have relationships with patients where they thanked you for treatment, which, you know, when I did root canals or dentures or amalgams, you know, first when I first got out of dental school, you know, they thanked me for getting them out of pain maybe, but it was never a heartfelt thank you. You've had a positive influence on my life. Then all of a sudden you do a tooth colored crown to replace a PFM, and it's like, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. You changed my life. And it's like, you know, that's when something clicks in your brain that really dentistry is an amazing profession where, and there's not many of them out there, professions where you can change someone's life in a really positive way. And you know that being in hygiene.
Yes.
And then that changes my life, right?
Yes, it starts to shape you and your love for it, and your passion, and your want to improve yourself, and so on and so on and so on. It's that frequency that keeps feeding the passion, doesn't it?
It is, and it's certainly not a vicious cycle. It's a very positive, rewarding cycle that you keep wanting to do that because of the way you feel when your patients are thankful.
Yes.
Right? And in my educational process, same way. I mean, what you just shared with me about what some doctor said, that means the world to me. Because if I have the opportunity to have a positive influence on someone's life, so maybe they'll be in practice longer or enjoy with it.
Yes.
You know, the more you enjoy something, the better you are at it, in my opinion. And if you have a good day in dentistry, you're going to go home and you're going to have a better night with your spouse and your family and your friends.
That's exactly right. So what would you say were some things that you learned along the way? Maybe some things that people should know, like some aha moments as you progress through this growth in your profession and you look back and you say, I wish I'd have known this.
That's a good one. I wish I would have, you know, I think an obstacle for a lot of dentists is letting the patients really have the opportunity to have the treatment that they want, not that you think they can afford. And I see this so much when I work with doctors where, you know, a patient drives up in an old Honda Civic and they think, well, you know, I can't really talk to them about veneers, right? So I'll just replace that one crown. And I think that's a mistake a lot of dentists make. And I think I made that early on as well. I saw the old beat up Honda Civic and thought, you know, yeah, they need that PFM replaced, but yeah, it would look better if I did 8 veneers around it, but they can't afford that. So I'm not going to talk to them about that, right? Then I realized that, I mean, they may drive that old Honda Civic because they're not into cars.
Right? Absolutely correct.
Which I'm into cars, right? And I would think I'd want a nicer car.
It's your bias.
But yeah, that is my bias. And I realize, you know, this patient, what they want is they want the opportunity to make good decisions that will have a positive influence on their self-worth and their self-image. So then when it was all about the patient versus about me, you know, that needs to be replaced, that PFM, Kelly. If I match that to the rest of your teeth, would you look in the mirror and say, this is the most amazing smile ever? And all of a sudden they'd say, no, I wish they were whiter. Okay, well, that treatment plan just changed. I didn't tell them. They want whiter teeth along with that crown.
Yeah.
So that's whitening and a new crown.
Yes.
So, okay, so if your teeth are whiter and now that crown that doesn't you don't like now match the rest of your whiter teeth, would you look in the mirror and say, I absolutely love my smile? And they'd say, well, this one's a little shorter. This one's rotated. I've got that mercury filling back here that kind of shows. All right, well, this is your opportunity. I can replace that crown, or I can give you the smile of your dreams by incorporating that in with the rest of aesthetic dentistry, right? And it amazed me how many patients would say, how come no one's talked to me about this before?
I know.
It's like, I don't know, but they should have. And maybe it was me 3 years ago that I didn't, right?
So you had a question. What was the question? If I did this.
I never limit. And it's always... And I'm very, very visual, so I think the whole world is visual. I hand them a big mirror, and I say, okay, imagine you with that crown that doesn't match, and that's need dentistry. In my opinion, if someone has a PFM on a front tooth, that needs to be replaced. Yeah. I mean, one out of a gazillion have I seen to say, wow, I didn't know that was a crown. Right? With the technology today, there's no reason why a patient should be walking around with a crown that looks like a crown, right?
Yes.
So in my opinion, that's need dentistry, and I would just ask them. I wouldn't limit them. I wouldn't say, you know, we'll do that crown and it'll look great. I use a great lab. We use great materials. It'll fit great. It won't look like that. It's, yeah, I can do that. But is that exactly where you want to go? At the end of the journey, are you going to look at that tooth and say, I love my smile? And usually the answer is no.
Okay.
Right?
So if I did this, is this going to be the smile that you really
absolutely
want?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's
absolutely
a great question
absolutely
to bring in to build the trust transfer with that patient to you, and then open up the conversation for what they're really thinking that they've probably never verbalized. But well, if this, then that. Well, if this, if we're really talking about this is what I really want.
Yeah. And they may not know really what they want because they don't know what's available.
That's correct.
Right. And they've gone to the same dentist forever, and the dentist looks at that crown. It looks good on the x-ray, looks good clinically. And maybe they've had it replaced a few times in their life because they broke that tooth as a teenager. But no one's ever said there's another option that we can incorporate into that. The other thing is, my favorite quote is Wayne Gretzky, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yes.
Right? And I think we need to take those shots. And I think a lot of dentists are kind of afraid of that. Lots of times it's men. So I have, I'm kind of digressing a little bit, but it all fit together. So I have and this is what every dentist should have, is a question on your health history form. And mine says, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you like to change about your smile? Right? So some dentists, they may be scared to ask their patients because their patients are going to think they're money grabbing. You know, if I said, hey, you know, you want to bleach your teeth or you want to do some veneer, that question is asked, right? So they can either leave it blank. They can say yes or no, right? And a lot of men, middle-aged men, they'll leave it blank, right? So let's say you came in, and it's usually men. And I hate to say this, but usually it's men. Where they'll have, let's give example, a PFM on number 8 that's ugly. All right. So I'm going through a normal exam. This is not necessarily a cosmetic exam. This is a new patient exam, like we've all done. And I hand them a mirror and I'll say, how long have you had that crown? They'll say, well, I broke my tooth when I was 20 and I've had this about 12 years. And I say, awesome. I said, does it bother you at all? And they'll say, no, it's fine. It doesn't bother. I mean, you've had quite a conversation with patients like that too. No, it doesn't bother me at all. So most people just move on. That to me is an opportunity. I say, okay, great. You know what? I'm looking at the x-ray. It's fine. It's fine. There's no decay. You know, it's a metal-based crown. We don't use metal in the practice anymore. If you'd ever want to explore some options, I am here for you. And then I move on. So I didn't try to sell them. I didn't say it needed to be replaced. I didn't say, if it was me, you should absolutely replace. I just said, you know, I'm here for you. By the time I get down to the lower right molars and I'm still doing my exam, I would say 95% of the time, the person that said, no, it's fine, will say, talk to me again about what you can do to get rid of this and look like a tooth. And I said, I'm glad you asked. Because really cool, fun things that we can do for you. And I think, again, a lot of dentists are afraid to ask. And notice I didn't ask him, hey, or I didn't tell him, we need to replace that. You need to do it for yourself. It's like, you know, I'm here for you if you ever wanted it replaced. Right. And so I think it's really important to ask our patients questions, or even if they've got old fillings or diastomas, just to say, do they bother you at all? And yeah. If they say no, I say, great. They don't bother me either. But if you ever wanted them closed or things change, I'm here for you. Yeah. And I move on.
But it's letting them know that there are options that they can explore. It gives that patient that autonomy to move on.
Yeah. And you know that I'm going to interrupt you and I apologize.
No, it's okay.
Is the interesting thing is they were probably never asked by previous dentists.
I know.
And so our patients, you know, the internet's changed thing and Instagram and virtual, all these things have changed the educational process with patients. But if they've never been asked, they have no idea.
Yeah.
They have no idea.
It's, I talk about this all the time with the groups that I speak to, that we have to get our mind out of their pocketbook. It's none of our business what they can or can't
afford.
Absolutely not. So what would you say, or how would you help people understand that they really need to stop doing that? Of team members, like, it's a mindset, right? Because we know that we cannot judge people based on our own bias. And that's actually what we're doing. So what are your magic words to help your team understand that?
So it's kind of interesting you ask that, because I struggled initially with this. I have a dental assistant that's been with me 30 years. She's amazing. I say she's the second best dentist in the world. But I'm exaggerating. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wait,
someone's got to be first. Not me. I didn't say I was first. She's the second. But when she was young, you know, at the time I was paying her maybe $30,000 a year in the day, right? And we would treatment plan these big cases, full mouth rehabs that were $40,000, right? And patients seemed excited. I thought I created enough value for them, but then the conversion of treatment plan's acceptance wasn't very high, right? Her name's Danielle. And I said, Danielle, I'm struggling a little bit. The patient seemed excited. And I know you were excited for them. How come they didn't go for treatment? And she goes, I'm struggling as I tell them the dollar amount. And I said, why? And she said, because it's more than I make in a year. And I'm struggling getting that $40,000 out of my mouth when I think that's more than I make for a year. Okay. That's understandable. I mean, that's acceptable.
Yeah, that's a.
So I said, so that last guy we just saw that didn't accept treatment, replacing that crown, lengthening his teeth, maybe doing a smile maker or whatever it is. What do you think that's worth to him? And she said, priceless. I said, so you're telling me that you can't sell something that is priceless for only $40,000. And it's like click for her. She goes, you're right. That's a good investment for them. I said, what if you had the opportunity to buy something that was priceless for $40,000? What would you do? You can't afford it. What would you do? She said, I would find a way to make it happen because that is such an amazing deal. How could I pass that up?
I love that.
So I call it the gift.
Yes.
So we don't think about it. Okay, we sold a $40,000 or $20,000. I mean, it doesn't really matter the dollar amount.
Right, right.
And we get bonuses and I get to buy a new boat. I mean, you know, that exaggerating, obviously.
Yes, yes, yes.
But we don't think of it in that way. We think we have the opportunity to give our patients a gift. And they can either take that gift from us. If I had a wrap gift, I could say, this is for you. You could either take it or not. Right? And the more passionate, the more enthusiastic I am about saying, this is an amazing gift. I want you to have this.
Yeah, yeah.
The more likely you're going to accept it versus saying, no, I really can't take a gift, or you're going to leave it unwrapped and leave at the end of the day. So when I go in and talk to my patients, it's not about me. It's about them saying, you know what? I can change your life. I already know this. I can change your life in a very, very cool way if you want me to. And so as I talk to my patients, as my team talks to my patients, it's really about what we call the gift. You're giving them a gift.
Oh my God, you're powerful. I would say that is a gift to people to learn that they have a gift. It's it, because if we don't understand the capacity of who we are to change people's lives, it's our own limiting belief, because we have so much capability to do that.
Yeah. And I call it the fast moving train to paradise, because during my consults, I'm very excited and passionate. My next favorite quote, and I'll take credit for this, is enthusiasm equals credibility. And so as I talk to you, I'm not going to say, you know, we could replace that. We don't use metal anymore, and it'll look good, and it'll fit good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's good. It kind of sounded like that, huh? This is going to be absolutely amazing. You know, the opportunity when you look in the mirror and you don't even know that's a tooth, it's going to be life-changing for you. And then I always use third-person verification. Where I say, Danielle, is this going to be amazing or what? She goes, it's going to be unbelievable. And that could be a single crown. It could be veneers. It could be a smile design. Sure. Whatever it is. But the reason I call it a fast-moving train to paradise is they can feel my excitement. Right? Everyone wants to feel good. If I was telling you a story about it somewhere we were traveling and I was so fired up and animated and excited about it, you'd want to go.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd want to go there.
Let's go.
But the only way that you can feel what I feel is to go there. Right? You can look at pictures and you can hear me, but you can't really sense what I feel unless you go there.
Yes.
So in my consultations with my patient, it is all about, I'm so excited for you. I'm excited. This is going to be awesome. They can feel that. And the only way they can feel how I feel is to accept treatment. And they want to be part of that. So they're jumping on the train because I'm going there no matter what. You're either on the train with me and you get to be there and experience that, or you're not. And that's cool. But I want you to at least give you the opportunity to feel what I feel, because I know when you look in the mirror and we're done, this is going to be awesome.
Yes.
Really awesome.
Yes. As you're saying this, I'm experiencing, because people do get, when you say, I am so excited for you, whether, no matter what it is in someone's life, you can feel the elevation of the frequency and the vibe. And it's, yeah, I want to go. I have FOMO. They almost have FOMO if they don't say yes. Of what am I missing? Mm-hmm. What could I be experiencing? Yeah. Right.
Like you said, they can't experience unless they accept treatment.
Yeah.
To go there. And, you know, I know some dentists will listen and say, I can never do that. I can never do that. Because I have a really good friend that's an amazing clinical dentist. Amazing. But he's not this big, vibrant personality. And so he can't do what I just talked about. And I know there's listeners who say, I would feel uncomfortable being that animated, maybe. So he has a dental assistant that does that.
Okay.
So she will say, his name's Dana. She'll say, Dana, this is going to look amazing. I mean, it's going to change Kelly's life. It's going to be unbelievable. And he's like, yes, it is. And I can't wait to do it. Can you imagine what it's going to look like? And we're going to pick a cool color. And he would say, yes, we will. You know, but because he doesn't have that personality.
Yes, we will. No, we won't. Yeah.
But she's on that train.
Yeah.
And again, the patients want to feel her excitement.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's even, because, you know, it's kind of hard to toot your own horn sometimes.
Yeah.
We
have to understand the capability we have in this lifetime to be able to do this.
Absolutely.
For people. This is why we're servant leaders. And if we're not telling people what we see, they can never accept treatment.
Absolutely.
Right? So we have to tell them what it is and take ourselves out of it and give them the gift. David.
Yeah.
It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Are we done already?
We are. That's done 30 already.
Minutes. Oh my God. I could talk for hours.
I know. I'm going to have you back if you're okay with
anytime.
That. I know that you have
anytime.
Things to go do, but
we'll do it again.
Yes. So
I hope it's worthwhile for everyone that's listening and watching.
Oh my gosh. It's David Hornbrook. Come on. So if you guys want to get in touch with David, his information will be in the show notes. Such an honor.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Yes, thank you. All right, for all the listeners, you guys know what I'm going to ask. 5-star review on Apple, please. Go on over to YouTube, like, subscribe, share. Thank you for each and every one of you and what you do every day to help the communities that we serve. We will see you next time, my friends. With love.